But there's something different when you add another thing to the mix, right? Like I had no idea the capacity that you could have for like loving anything until I had kids.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now, here's your host, Art Eddy.
What's happening, everybody? Here's another edition of the Art of Fatherhood podcast, and I'm very happy to have this guy. He's a great author, great illustrator. I've talked to him before, and I'm so glad to get him on the Art of Fatherhood podcast. It's Dustin Hansen. Thanks for taking the time, sir. How you doing?
Oh, man. Doing great, and like I said, we have talked before. I feel like this is like old friends hanging out, so I'm super honored. This is really fun.
So glad to chat with you. You're a very creative guy. You even, mix your craft of just writing and storytelling and art just with your family, and we're going to get in that in a second. We're going to be talking about your new book, obviously, here, The Legend of the Dream Giants. It's a beautiful book. I love the artwork. I just love the story. I think now more than ever, we kind of need this story. I know that, cliches or certain like ideas of topics that are, handed down to generation, sometimes we're like, well, why are we telling the story again? But you tell it in an awesome way, and we're going to get to that. But of course, I love bringing guys like yourself on to talk about fatherhood. Your kids are a little bit older than mine. I have two daughters, 14 and 11. But take me back when you found out you're going to be a dad, Dustin. What was going through your mind, sir?
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. That's a big question. My wife and I hadn't been married that long. It was a little bit of a surprise. We were married like 10 months, so that's pretty quick. And it's really interesting because of course I was terrified, like flat out, like what in the heck am I doing, kind of thing. And I tell you, it took me like 10 seconds of seeing that little dude to be like sunk. And I love my wife so much. Like I can't believe how much I loved her then. I love her more now. All those kinds of things. But there's something different when you add another, thing to the mix, right? Like I had no idea the capacity that you could have for like loving anything until I had kids. And yeah, my first son Tanner is like still to this day like best friend, the whole thing. Like couldn't imagine my life without him. And I have four kids, so I have a full house.
So you and your wife are playing Zone, because you and I are
Yeah,
basketball
totally.
fans, right?
Yeah, we are totally playing Zone. Yeah, and it's just been fascinating, and it's really interesting now that they're all adults. Like my youngest is 20. It's just so cool to see them take on their own lives and really change who they are, and even change who we thought they were, which is really cool, right? Like stuff I never expected in it, and just like I'm full of like gratitude, like seriously. I know, once again, cliche, right? Sounds corny, all that stuff. Like I'm filled with gratitude that I've got them in my life. They're just everything for me. So.
Love it, man. And there are cliches for a reason. Like when they say a baby changes everything, you were spot on when you hold your baby for the first time. There's because yeah, every guy for the most part is going to be nervous. I'm like, am I ready? Am I financially ready? Am I mentally ready? Am I physically ready? Whatever the case may be. But when you hold that child in your arms, all of this stuff just goes away. Like you almost just like transported to another world or a plane of existence. So I love that. And people know your work, creativity. There's a lot of heart in your stories. There's a lot of geekiness, which I love. Obviously, you and I bond over like video games and all the other good stuff, and not just sneakers and basketball and other things. But I know creativity and heart and just being it, like paying it forward and being kind are some of the values. But talk about some of the other things you were looking to instill into them.
Well, this is kind of, I hope this isn't the wrong tangent, but it reminded me of something. I remember reading Yo-Yo Ma, the cellist. I read his biography a long time ago. I was in college, so it's been quite a while ago. And he said in there, the thing that stuck out to me in the biography was that in China they have this concept that it takes three generations to make an artist, which I thought was really interesting. So he talked about his grandfather was a violin maker, his dad was an orchestra teacher, and being that they had gone through some of those things of like trying to become better at your craft, they knew how to support Yo-Yo to become a better cellist. And I've thought about that a lot as I've watched my kids grow up and how patient I mean, I'm not, this isn't me. This is, I've been able to be more patient with them making creative mistakes in their life, like in that really subjective field where there's no answers, right? It's it's not like you know, running a race where you can tell who's the fastest, right? Like when you do creative stuff, it's really subjective. But it's allowed me to be really patient with them, and at the same time kind of hold some pretty high expectations of what makes you a professional artist. And you know, three out of my four children are heading in that direction, which is just shocking to me that they would be that crazy to want to do that. But at the same time, I think part of that is that they've seen me fail a lot, and they've also seen me keep pushing through to kind of try to figure things out. And it's given them a huge leg up in their ability to like fail quicker, which is great. Like the faster you can fail, the better. So that's probably where most of that comes from, I think.
Nice. And the idea that it's okay to fail, I felt like, you know, maybe our generation, like growing up in the 80s, 90s, you know, it's kind of like, you can't fail. You gotta be perfect. And now we're starting to realize you don't have to be perfect. And maybe it's like, and again, another cliche is like, just give it your all, right? Give 110%.
Yeah.
We can't give 110%, give 100, whatever the case may be, right? Just do your best. And if you fail, like I remember when my oldest, when she was in sixth grade, one of her teachers said, you know what fail stands for? And everyone's like, what is it? Like first attempt in learning. And that sticks with me 3 years from the time that she told us at, you know, our dinner time. Like dinner time
awesome.
For us is where we talk about our highs and lows and just like what we learned or something, you know, that we took away from that day, right? And that will always stick with me because it's like, yeah, it's okay. Like if you fail on that test, try and better the next time. If you keep on failing, like, well, let's find an issue. But, you know, I'm not going to be like, you have to get 100% all the time. So and also too, it's very interesting too, with like you being an artist and a writer and like, all right, there's going to be three generations where they finally, you know, hone in on their craft. So I appreciate that. And I think you might've kind of answered this already, but what is something that besides patience, what is something that your kids have taught you about life or maybe about yourself that you didn't know that was there?
Man, that could probably be, you could probably do a whole podcast on that, right? Like, I mean, that's such a good topic. I think, you know, trying to be patient with them is a big thing, obviously. But I think what it taught me, I've been talking about this a lot lately with my oldest son, who is kind of really starting to stake his claim in the industry and starting to do some things. And part of it is I was teaching at college during that time. And I was watching a lot of students who, some of them were going to make it and some of them weren't, right? I mean, that's kind of the reality, right? And so I started trying to see what was different with between those people, you know, what was making somebody be a professional author or illustrator. And I realized that they were the same things I was watching with my kids. And it was these two major things. One is the ability to be self-critical. Like, know when your best is not really your best. Like, we're like, I did my best. And you really look at it and go, well, maybe I didn't. And maybe there's a little more to give. So being self-critical is a big one. And I definitely got that from like pushing my kids to try harder. And I'm looking at myself going like, geez, maybe I have more I can do, right? That was the big one. And then the other side of that, which is kind of this opposite side of the same coin, is being self-empathetic, if that's what it is. It's like allowing yourself to fail, which, because that's part of the process, right? Like, yeah, first attempt at learning. That's awesome. I'll never forget that either. Now,
so, nice.
Yeah. Tell the junior high teacher she did great. That
actually was a he. It was a he. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure he did great. That's awesome. that the part of that to me is that self-empathy is failing, but being able to say, but I'm okay. Like, it's okay to fail. Like, give yourself that forgiveness, because I've seen so many good artists and authors who are really talented. And the first time they start getting that feedback, they internalize it so much that it becomes crippling, right? Like, you're like, I can't draw anymore. I'm not as good as the next person, and that kind of feeling. That combination is something that I've really picked up from watching my kids grow and watching them kind of go through those things. Because you know how it is, like when you're like, I didn't spend any time thinking about how I got to where I was while I was doing it, right?
Yeah.
Like, say things like luck, and of course that's a huge part of it. And you know, I worked really hard at my craft, and all those things are all part of it. But I didn't diagnose the process when I was going through it. So to watch them, it's easier to watch their process and go, oh, this is what I'm doing right, or this is what I'm doing wrong. So yeah, it's impossible for me to separate my career and my creativity and my family. It's impossible.
Nice, man. Yeah, and I think nowadays our kids, like when we were growing up, YOLO maybe was out there, but we never called it YOLO, but it was just like, you only live once, go ahead, you know, like, just, you know, yeah, live your best life. But then FOMO, that wasn't in our vocabulary, right? And now we see all of these different sites and apps and, you know, social media where people can show their creativeness, right? And just show all their work. And it's like, everybody was like, wow, that person's there and they're a little bit younger than me, or this person is like right. doing this. And I'm like, where should I be? There was so much, I think, more on a burden on our kids today, where it is like, oh, they're there and I kind of want to be where they're at. So they focus on that person's journey or their work, and their work could be great and fantastic, but what you can bring, if, like you said, if you're going to be a good writer and going to, you know, publish stuff and people want to pick up your stuff, don't try and bite their style just because they've had success, right?
I love that. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that's kind of interesting there, Instagram's kind of changed this a little bit to me, where people are willing to throw stuff that's unfinished as far as artwork goes, and Twitter too. You know, I see it a lot, and it's kind of nice, right? So you can see somebody's process. But quite often, I see myself do this too, and I've certainly seen it in my kids too, where they'll compare somebody's finished product to their in-process work, right? So most people won't share the stuff that should be edited. They'll share something that's really good. And you look at those people and you think, man, everything they do is fantastic. And they're missing out on that, you know, missing out on their bad work. And it's really important to be able to kind of understand the difference between result and process, right? So kind of what you're saying, it's hard not to compare. What's that saying? A comparison is the thief of joy.
Oh, right?
Totally. And in any field.
Yeah, any field, and I think nowadays too, it's like you could have won like $500,000, right? And then you see someone like win $750,000. I don't know if it's a weird thing, but it's like,
yeah,
they won $750,000. Neat, but like 10 minutes ago, you won $500,000. That's a weird analogy, but I'm just saying, it works. Like, yeah. It's like, you always want more. It's like, oh, but I like what they're having. The grass is always greener. It's like you're eating a piece of chocolate cake, but there, someone else is eating a piece of chocolate cake, maybe with like some Cool Whip on it. You're like, why don't I have that, right? So yeah, it's just,
yeah,
this is a new version of this is why we can't have nice things, because we aren't in the moment of joy or just enjoying where we've you know, what we've accomplished. Because I was just thinking too, like off air before we were talking about like the Disney trip I just went on. Disney brought me over to check out the Star Cruiser, and I was just like, while I was there, I was like, you know, taking photos and videos and all this other stuff, and I was like, I was enjoying it, but like, was I appreciating it to its fullest while I was there? Because I was almost thinking like, all right, when I get home, I have to do this, this, and this with not just this project, but other things I had going on, right? And I'm just like, it's a life lesson that I need to do and also teach my kids, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's one of those things, I don't know, probably being older gives you that perspective that you're like right in the middle of it and you're like, geez, I should slow down and take a look at this. But usually it's the perspective that brings that emotion up, right? Like, oh man, I wish I could go do that again. And you know, my daughter, speaking of another kid, just starred in the college production of a show called Tuck Everlasting.
Oh, nice.
And I don't know if you've heard the story. It's like a really great book, and it's an awesome musical. And the whole thing is kind of centered around this concept of there's a spring that if people drink from it, they live forever. They become immortal. And she's presented with the opportunity to do that or to live a full life, because the people that have done that in the past talk to her and say, like, it's like when a boat gets dropped, an anchor gets dropped on a boat, right? It just stays there and the waves move on and you're stuck. Wouldn't you be better to pull up the anchor and go through your entire life and really see that? And it just resonated with me at this like incredible level of how getting old and growing up and watching that yourself is fascinating, and seeing how those things change. But the most impressive, incredible part of that is seeing everybody else around you also grow and learn and see how complex and how interesting these people can become. And yeah, it's hard to stop and look at that stuff when you're going 90 miles an hour, but you're right. It's really, really important.
You know, I've know of the book and the play and all that, but it is such a good reminder. Just when you're thinking about, just because of our Star Wars brains, I was thinking about when, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this already, but one of the versions from the Book of Boba Fett, one of the episodes when Luke Skywalker is teaching Grogu and he's like, you can go and hang out with the Mandalorian, But you like he ages quicker than you, right? So that
Yeah.
relationship, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna do it anyways. It's like, I'm going
Yeah.
anyways. He wants to experience and be in the moment, so I love it. One more question. Well, there's gonna be more ties into fatherhood, but before we talk
Sure.
about the book, do you have a dad hack or something that a piece of advice you'd offer to new dads? It doesn't have to, well, can be for new dads or just a dad hack that you've experienced that you are like, this is money. I know I should share it with my fellow dad brethren.
Yeah, okay, I'm gonna tell a couple that I think are just
Nice.
so dumb, but they are good for me. Teach your kids how to fill out a job application when they're 12 years old.
Okay.
Right? Go get one. Like, just take them there and have them ask. Go to a bakery and say, hey, you guys hiring? I mean, they're not even old enough to hire yet, right? But that's such an intimidating process for when you start entering the market that I think it's good to show that it's really no big deal. It's something I didn't do, and I wish I had. Like, I wish I would have taught my kids, like, how do you go out and find some work? And part of that process is literally filling out that application. And it's cool to see that. Like, I wish I would have, because when my kids hit like that 16 age where they're all wanting to get their first job kind of thing, they look at it and they're like, what's a reference? Like, can I put you on it? No, I'm your dad. You can't put me on it. But what I think it would have maybe changed is it would have changed their perspective to think, if I'm responsible and I can build connections and interact with people, I will be able to use my high school math teacher as a reference because I've built a relationship. So that's one I would say, like,
I love that.
fill out a job app early.
I love that. And I guess what next time I go grocery shopping, I'm just going to get a couple of job applications for my kids to
Yeah.
fill out. Thank you, man.
Yeah, that's a big one. And then the one that I felt like I've done a little bit, probably even a worse job of. And part of this is I think growing up when I did, and I think you're probably in the same boat, even though you're definitely younger than me. I knew what a credit score was, but I didn't really know what a credit score was, right? So just that simple concept of talking to him about how important it is to like understand credit scores. Like, how does it all work? Like, and why is that important? Because it's nothing they're going to learn in school for sure. And it's a real bummer when you turn 18 and now that's part of you and you don't know how to do it, and someday maybe you need something and it's not there. So that one's probably not as hacky as grab the job application, but I do think talking to them early about like what a credit score is and getting them even a shared credit card that they can start using and be responsible for. To me, those are two things that are like really kind of simple things that I wish I would have done. So those are.
Great, no, great thing right there. I remember getting a savings account when I was in high school when I got my first job, and I like not that I still not all the time, but there are certain times where I'll write a check or whatever the case may be, and I still, even though I have like online banking, I still have a ledger and I debit and credit just to make sure everything is, you know, copacetic and everything is all right.
Yeah.
But showing your kids that, and also, you know, man, I think I got my first credit card, like, and all those, you know, when I went to UNH, it was like that little like MUB section where it's like credit cards, get a free shirt, get a free
Right.
like, you know, pizza grill or whatever. It's like sweet, and you get like a credit card, and you're like, what's the APR on that? 72? Oh, sure, that sounds good, right? And you're like,
Yeah,
no,
perfect.
it's not good. No. So good
Yeah.
hack right there. I hope people take those two hacks to heart,
Yeah,
man.
I learned this one little saying and it really matters something to me. It's those who understand interest earn it, those who don't pay it. And that's really what that is to me. Like, if you
Dude,
have an understanding of that, like, that really does help.
put that on a t-shirt and put your quotes down there, man. I love it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Love it. Another thing I love is your work, Legend of Dream Giants. Talk a little bit about the idea of this book and what it means to you to have this book published there.
Thanks, man. It's a big one for me. I published my first book like 8 or 9 years ago, and I love that book still today. But this is the book that I used to find my first agent. And in the book world, that's kind of a big deal to like find an agent. And I had spent that maybe 3 or 4 years working on the book before I found the agent. And the agent was never able to sell it. We worked the heck out of it. Maybe we worked it too much. Actually, we definitely did. We overworked it. Never found a home for it, and eventually I had to give up on selling it. It just wasn't going to happen. And part of the reason why is I would hear back from editors the same thing over and over again. I like the book, but I don't know where to put it. It's too sad. I would hear things like that, right? And I get that because it's not the happiest book in the world.
Yeah.
I'll talk about that a little bit too. But I did put it away for quite a while. And I got a new agent. Nothing against the old one. She was great too. I just found one that kind of aligned better with my art. Like she could help me sell my art as well. And we had sold a book to DC, one that you and I talked about. That's actually where we met, I think, was with DC book stuff. And she asked me, like, what else do you have? And I said, I've got this weird book about a lonely giant that, is he's really suffering, not because of who he is, but kind of because of the legends of the giants in the past. Like, it's not his fault, but he's dealing with those consequences. And I really love that book. And she's like, oh, let me read it. I'd love to read it. And she sold it in like 24 hours. And it taught me a lot, too, about the importance of timing. Finding the right people who really can love the work that you do, like finding those champions, which was a big thing. And I really did. The editor for this book has just been a champion. So, it's great. And so it's been like a 10, 12-year journey to get this book published, which is crazy to me to even think about that it's been that long, because it feels like I just, worked on it yesterday. But it's one that I'm really, really proud of, which is hard for me to stay as an artist. artists, we're always critical of our own work. This is one that I'm proud of. And I think part of the reason I'm proud of it is that it does tell a story that I'm really passionate about how important it is to, for one, to find that right person, right? Find those people that really believe in you independently, because there's a lot of happiness there, whether that's in your actual family or whether it's from a found family. That's a big one. But I think the other one to me is there's a character in the book named the mayor. That's all I ever call him. I don't ever talk about his name, even though I have a name for him. I call him the mayor, and I did that intentionally so that he would be a little bit more aloof. You wouldn't know the details about him. He has this ability to control a lot of people through the way he talks, and his ability to kind of get people to follow him. And these people unwillingly follow him into a pattern of prejudice and hatred towards Barry. It's totally unfair. And the ones that have the opportunity to get to know him realize that that's not really who he is, and they're really following somebody else's prejudices rather than kind of defining their own take on people. And I love that. That's the story I wanted to tell. The great thing about fantasy is that you can tell that without hurting anybody, right? He's a giant. None of us know a giant. None of us can say, oh, this is obviously this guy. I love that about fantasy, that we can separate some of that reality, and when those characters are gone, the reality remains, if that makes any sense. So
Big time.
that's
No,
my big spiel. Sorry.
you brought up so many great points, and what you said, I think we need this book now more than ever, just with what's going on in the world, right? And the idea of just like hating something because a friend or someone you're like, yeah, we should hate that. I don't know why we should hate that, but we should.
Right.
And it's like,
So easy to do.
do you even know why? Like, you just read 120 characters or 240 characters and you're angry at the sun because someone else is angry at the sun? Like, let's hold up. But talk about art imitating life and life imitating art with this book, where he's got to go find his tribe. You had the first agent, like, yeah, and other people like saying no, but like all of a sudden you found a tribe that's going to support you, right? And appreciate the story that you're trying to tell and what you're trying to portray in this book. And you found someone to do that. And I think that's a great life lesson, not just for your kids, but people listening to this. And I just, congratulations on getting that done. We were talking earlier about maybe living in the moment, right? Took you 12, 10, 12 years to live in that moment, but you finally got it. And that, I think, is going to be a sweeter reward than just, another. I mean, anytime you get a book published or like a green light to do
Sure.
something, that's fantastic. But for me, I'm going to equate it to like certain interviews that took me a while to finally get, like 5 years to finally wrangle and finally get. And someone's like, oh, it must be so easy. And I'm like, thanks, and just go from there. Because I'm like, some people don't want to be bogged down. When someone's like, oh, hey, how you doing? Unless you're like from this, like, unless you're living in the South or like a place where people always really want to know, like growing up in different areas, like Northeast, it's like, how you doing? You just say good and you move on. You're in the
Right.
South, like in North Carolina, like, how you doing? I'm doing good. I just, mowed the grass. It looks great. How about you? Well, I just got a dog. Awesome. Like, people in the North would be like, what are you doing? I just wanted fine and you'd move on. So I think the fact that you can relish that and I'm so happy for you, dude. And just like even reading this book is even more sweeter. So I hope people will pick this up because, again, I think the themes in that are definitely needed today. And not just for kids, but for adults as well. So I love it.
Thanks. That means a lot. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no doubt. So, it's like, it's kind of when you're doing the writing and the illustrations, you're like the Bo Jackson in the book world where you're doing both things, right? And I say that because... Man.
You just made my whole month. Anyone call me anything close to Bo Jackson? That's funny.
Bo Jackson is one of my favorite athletes of all time. I actually me like too. On the other side of this, I have like the posters I've kept from like when I was in the 80s and 90s, and I still collect his shoes and all the other stuff. We're gonna talk about shoes in a second, but
okay. Yeah.
It must be hard to write a book, but then also, I mean, I think there's pros and cons where it's like you know what the artist and the story where it's going, so you can kind of format that. But like, are you more critical of your writing or your illustrations? And it'll probably be different from each project and book, but maybe let's just stick with this one. Were you tougher on the illustrations or the story, or like a little bit of both?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm probably tougher on the writing because I'm not as comfortable there.
Okay.
Right? I mean, my whole career has been drawing art, and certainly storytelling has been a part of that. But yeah, I seek more feedback with the writing, definitely. But you are right. They kind of serve different purposes. Initially, well, in the book, the illustrations are kind of representations of the main character, Barrick's. Barrick is his name, the giant. They're representations of his dreams. So it was a little, dreams are great, right? I can draw anything. So I never had to draw the giant, which I thought was a really fun kind of way to take that. Because I did kind of want people to kind of imagine what the giant looked like on their own, even though his back is on the cover. So they kind of serve different purposes. One thing with art that's always interesting is that even this is going to sound weird, but it's actually less subjective than prose, right? Like, so for example, if you kind of, you can get away with something by saying like, it was a big black snarling dog, right, in prose. And people might see that as a Doberman, they might see it as a Rottweiler, they might see it as a mutt, they might see it as a black wolf. There's all these different things. But as soon as you draw it, that's gone, right? So I think there's a different kind of responsibility when it comes to art about saying, what do I want to hide? What do I not want to show? What do I want to let the reader imagine? And I love that play of like deciding what to do. And they definitely serve different purposes, but they're both, I think, kind of come from the same mindset for me anyway.
Nice, man. And something we talked about before we started recording was just the fact that you're oldest now. He's making his way in the world through an art, you know, through the same craft as you with writing and all that. And like you said earlier, like you need to have some thick skin, but you also need to not only self-critique yourself, but get ready for some criticism, right? To become better.
Yeah.
And so for you, this kind of ties with your craft and also fatherhood. How has that bond strengthened between, with all your kids? I know that you have a strong bond, but like with, especially him, because you mentioned him earlier, how does that bond strengthen over working together and being like, my son's actually giving me some good, you know, advice on where to go. But like, how has that dynamic like blossomed since you guys started doing that together?
Yeah, it's been really cool. You always hear when people are writing to get a writing group, right? That's an important thing. And I've had a group of people I've written books with for years and years and years. And their feedback is really important to me. However, it's different when you're working with somebody to a point where you're literally like, I have a new idea, I'm going to go brainstorm this before I even put it into my book. And so part of it's access, like this incredible access that we have. And we both basically have the same background, right? Like we have so many things that are similar that we can shortcut some of those, you know, type of things. I don't have to explain as much to him as I would to someone else. But I do think the best thing has been, and it's taken us a long time to get here, to where we can be really, really honest with each other. And you know how that is. Like somebody that can tell you that you're doing something wrong, but you know that they honestly care about you, like that's a really cool relationship. It's super rare. Like my wife does that, but my wife, she'll probably watch this podcast, so she's going to hear this, and it's okay. She's more the hang the picture on the fridge support kind of thing. She's like, I love everything. Oh my gosh, that's the best thing you've ever written. And my ego needs that too.
It's like the John Lovitz character in The Simpsons. Oh, that's wonderful. Oh,
totally. Yeah. And my
not John Lovitz. I forgot who it was. Maybe it was him. I don't know. But when Marge was doing the drawings, I'm sorry. Just weird pop culture things
pop up. Yeah, no. I think it was John Lovitz. I need that. I'll be the first person to admit it. An artist needs a fan, and she's my fan. And so that's always great. But my oldest son in particular also can be a fan, but he can also say, however, I don't like what you're doing here, and here's why. That's great. It's so, so amazing. And it, like I said, it takes a while to develop that with anybody. And, you know, like I said, he's 26. I'm not that young. So he's an adult, and he has a different perspective than me, but it's been really cool. And same thing, I can give him different type of advice that he won't have because I'm in my 50s. You know, he'll never have this point of view. So we have enough different that we can really kind of help each other out. So yeah, I love it. It's the best.
I love hearing that. And that's another thing too, where I think now more than ever, like you see the meme going around, especially on social media, where it's just like, don't take advice from people you don't even know, right?
Right.
Or don't take criticism from people you don't know, because they don't know your whole story, right? But your son does, and you know, your agent does, and all these people that are in your circle, that are in your tribe, they kind of know. And I know it's something that I'm like, my kids, you know, my oldest, she has a phone, but like, she's not on social media, because I'm like, I don't need a million, you know, eyes on you compared to when I was your age and I had like 100 eyes. You should still have those 100 eyes on you. And yes, you're going to have to deal with that, but you don't have to deal with a million people, you know, yelling at you, whatever the case may be. So I love that. Before we go into the fatherhood quick five, there's a lot of things that we both share upon. Sneakers is one of them. I love the fact that we, you know, shoot like heat emojis at each other's sneakers and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
What? Again, you and I grew up in, you know, the 80s and 90s, the basketball era, and of course everybody's music is better. Everybody, you know, in that time, whatever era you're from, that music is better, that TV, whatever show was better. But I felt like, to me as a football fan too, it's like, I feel football is still good, but I feel like the 80s and 90s hoops were just the best, right?
Yeah. Oh,
I'm not taking away
anything
from Bill Russell. I mean, Bill Russell, like people, I mean, I'm a Jordan fan, but like when people talk about the GOAT, like
even with this,
Bill Russell
would
like a word
fan.
With you, right? But where did the sneakers, like for you, come from? Like, where did the passion for that come from?
Well, I know for me, the first time, like when I really started digging sneakers was during the Michael Jordan, I'm a Jordan fan too, but like the Michael Jordan, Karl Malone era, and I was a huge jazz fan, and Michael Jordan broke my heart so many times. And I bought a pair of LA Gear Karl Malone shoes. Like, I saved up for them forever, and they were just absolute crap. They were uncomfortable. They didn't last. Like, they were hideous. I even knew at the time they were ugly. Like, it was one of those things. And I will always, my entire life, be a Utah Jazz fan. It's, you know, once you're a fan, you're a fan. But I do remember picking up a pair of, like, early Jordan 3s and 5s and being like, oh, yeah, these are shoes. So that's what it was for me. It was early Nikes really got me really into it. And I'm still pretty loyal to Nike. Like, I do love Nikes. I'm a huge fan. But I think my tastes have shifted. And I'm a real sucker for nostalgia when it comes to shoes. And I love, like, all the colorway stuff that's happening is real cool. And I really dig that kind of stuff. And so it's fun for me to see, like, unique versions of shoes that I like come out. My brand loyalty has changed the older I've gotten. I'm more into just like finding cool shoes that have nostalgia to me. So
same. Really? I'm still like, you know, I definitely buy Nike, but Adidas, Reebok, and all that other stuff. For me, it was like saving up money for the the Bo Jackson SC trainers, like the ones that were like auburn colors, you know, because he's playing for the Raiders and the Royals and stuff like that. I just remember sixth grade walking into middle school being like, I love the Air Jordan 5s, but I was like, no, I want to get these Bo Jacksons. And then, like, obviously, I got married in the Air Jordan 11s. But, like, for me, it was just something like those shoes, like, LA Gear, like, you know, with the Grandma Ma, or that was Converse with the React shoes, all of the, like, British Knights, all that stuff. It's like those shoes. It's like also, too, like Transformers. They have, like, they rebranded, like, the packaging from the 80s. I'm like – yeah, I definitely don't need to spend this much money on Soundwave, but I'm getting them anyways because I love that packaging, right?
Yep. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I love that kind of stuff, and I'm a big Lego fan. So unfortunately, the Adidas Lego stuff is hurting me. I'm trying not to buy too much of that. I love those weird crossovers. You got like on the desk. Oh, that's so cool.
So I bought not only, I mean, I have a few Adidas like real life sneakers, but I have ones like the shell toes that are actually like,
oh yeah,
put sneakers, I mean Legos on. And then I got the big shoe I haven't put together yet, but I just spent enough money so I could get all of that, like with like that little shoe and this little guy too, right?
That's so cool.
It's they're hurting our bank accounts. Everybody knows what they're doing right now.
So, yeah, and I do legitimately have a shoe budget because if I don't, I'll go over it.
Video games, man. You wrote a book about video games. Talk a little bit about like your top. Do you have like a top five video game list?
I'm a big story video game player, but I don't know if any of those. Well, maybe they probably do hit some of my top fives. I love games. It's kind of changed in every era based on who I was.
Yeah.
Super Tecmo Bowl was the best game I ever played when I was a kid. And it's all I ever wanted to work on was a football game. That's what I started the career on. And so I had the chance to work on NFL Street. That was kind of my baby, like literally my baby. Actually, yeah, I've got like...
Hold up. Wait, what?
Yeah.
How am I just knowing about this now? Oh my...
Yeah. It's me, like art director for NFL Street. Yeah. It's my, so I got to work on that. Uh-oh, I lost you. Oh, if you come back with a copy, you're the man.
Come back with what?
A copy of the game.
Yeah. Oh, I got to show it to you just because like I like those, like the NFL Blitz,
like
Street and all that other stuff, they were just great. And people are probably like, I'm actually looking through one of those CD cases for this game. But you go ahead, keep on talking though.
Yeah, so for me, like Super Tecmo Bowl literally was the game for me. That was the one that was like, I'm gonna work in the games industry. And so when I got to work, I got a job working on Madden. And when I got there, they're like, hey, there's this other project we think you might be a better fit with. And so I was able to work with a couple of really smart people to launch NFL Street, which today, I mean, I've worked on a lot of games since. It's been the most fun game I've ever worked on. The team was awesome. Of course, the content was great. And, you know, it was cool living. I was in Florida, so we'd have players come up from Tampa all the time. And for some strange reason, they thought we were the celebrities because we're making Madden, right? And I'm like, dude, you're Warren Sapp. Like, you're my hero. So it was really fun. Oh, there it is. Oh, man, that's so cool.
Oh, I love that, dude. Like, I have a lot of respect for you, but they just went high. Like, I love those games, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, they're still my favorite.
I guess we're kind of, before we go with the Fatherhood Quick Five, NBA, I know it said Utah Jazz. Do you want to go, like, maybe top five Utah Jazz, or do you just want to go, like, top NBA players you love to watch?
Top NBA players I love to watch. Cool. Let's do that. Yeah.
Cool. Go ahead.
Today. I'm going today. I'm not going to go all time because that gets tough. Ja Morant might be number one, even though I'm a Utah Jazz fan.
Yep.
Like, the guy is just unbelievable. He is lightning in a bottle. And not only that, he looks cool. Like, everything he does is cool. He's so much fun to watch. So I'm a huge Ja Morant fan. Obviously, Donovan Mitchell is, I mean, that is the shoes I'm wearing. I'm wearing the, you know, Don 3 Bel Air.
Nice!
Like, I think he's incredible. And he has done so much for the community in Utah that people outside of Utah don't know. He is a massive advocate for anti-racism. He is a huge advocate for making sure that we're talking about these things. We aren't just letting them get covered up. Like, he is literally changing the political landscape of a state. An athlete. Isn't that cool? Like, how can you not love that guy? And I'm going to add another current Utah Jazz, but Rudy Gobert is like, he's so misunderstood. Like, people don't get what kind of a player he is and what kind of a person he is. So those three are like incredible to watch. And then definitely Steph Curry, because I'm not a fool and I will recognize he is the greatest. He's definitely getting like GOAT type, recognition. And then I'd be crazy to not say LeBron, who's just, I hate the Lakers. I hate him so much. I can't even breathe when I watch the Lakers, but he is another guy that's like changed the sport. He does so much outside of the sport. He's such a good person, or at least, you know, comes off that way. I don't know any of these guys, but that's kind of my thread, is usually like fun, interesting, athletic, change the game type people that are bigger than basketball. Like, those are the people I love to watch. So
No doubt, man. Love that. Thank you very much for sharing that. I know we could talk about so many different topics. I think I might just have you on to talk about video games and development and all that other stuff.
Oh, next time so you have a fun. Book,
we'll bring you back on and talk about that as well.
Yeah, I have a video game book coming out real soon. We could do it.
Nice, man. All right, now I got the Fatherhood Quick Five. Favorite family movie? Do you guys have one?
Oh yeah, Goonies. Like, it's not, I don't have to think about it. We all love it. Watched it a bunch of times. Yeah.
Okay. Favorite song, or is there an album or band or artist you couldn't wait to introduce your kids to?
Oh, I couldn't wait to introduce them to? Oh, yeah, definitely. So this was a long time ago, but we used to, anytime it was like, let's do a quick cleanup, right? I would put on the original NXS album. It's literally just called NXS. And we would play that because it's such a bop. Like, it's like totally going. And so now today, when my kids hear it, they're like, that reminds us of cleaning. So I probably ruined the album for it. But to me, when I hear it, I'm like, oh, cool, I'm ready to clean.
That music comes out, they start vacuuming or doing dishes. Like, why am I doing this? I have an involuntary
half love. Yeah.
Love it. Describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
Oh, let's see. That's a good one. My family's so diverse. Like, they all like to do different things. It would probably be somewhere fairly quiet. We're all kind of introverts. So I'd say a yurt on the northeast coast, somewhere in like Oregon for 2 or 3 days, where we could just kind of hang out, get to know each other, eat a lot of good food, but close enough that my son, who hates being outside, can jump in the car and go do something fun in Portland.
Nice. Very cool.
At night, yeah.
Favorite book you're reading now? Do you have one?
Yeah. Right now, I'm actually just kind of wrapping up Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss. I totally love his style. He's a real fun, like, interesting, get really deep into a single character kind of guy, but his books have a lot of like depth and meaning to them. So that's probably my favorite current read.
Nice, man. Love that. Yeah. And lastly, top three words you hope your kids would use to describe you as a dad. What would you want them to be?
Oh, man. Thoughtful, patient. It's a tough question. And probably selfless. I hope I can do that. And that's a hard one for anyone to say, right?
Yeah. But they're great three words right there, man. I think you're
sorry, that got me.
Yeah. I feel like an Oprah now or Barbara Walters. Yeah. Moment. I got you. people, make sure you follow Dustin on Twitter at Dust Hansen. That's DUST, then Hansen. And purchase The Legend of Dream Giants wherever you pick up books, and pick up all this great stuff. But you know what? Especially now, I'm seeing a trend where artists want to, put the spotlight on places where they feel like you should pick up a book. So I'm going to ask that question to you specifically.
Oh, yeah.
Where people should, that you like for people to purchase your book.
Yeah. There's a place, a store, an independent bookstore called The King's English. I'll send you the info on it. They're awesome. They'll send it to you for the same price as the Big A company. and if you buy them from them, I go in and I do like a unique drawing in each one of them for people. And part of that's just like, I love to support local small businesses, and they're good people. So yeah, the King's English is definitely where I would say to give them a ring. They could send you anything anywhere. So
awesome, man. Appreciate that. Cool. I wish you and your family continued success. And again, it's always a pleasure to chat with you, sir.
Thanks. And same to you. Give your family a love, and we'll catch you later.
Thank you. Thanks for checking out this week's edition of the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Please rate, subscribe, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And also go to artoffatherhood.net. You can have a chance to check out some great articles like the weekly Dad's Doing It Right column, the Collector of the Week, and many more. Plus, you have a chance to win some very cool prizes like video games, collectibles, all that good stuff. Go to artoffatherhood.net. And please make sure you rate, subscribe, and review wherever you listen to podcasts, because that'll greatly appreciate it to get the word out on the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts, and go to artoffatherhood.net.